Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast. I will be your host, Sirgun Kaur, and these will be conversations with spiritual music makers of all sorts that might even grow to be different kinds of artists, but I'm going to start with musicians. And I thought it very fitting to start this series with my friend Chad Wilkins, who was the multi-instrumentalist who recorded most of the musical accompaniment to my album Minus Eight. Chad was the reason that we recorded it at 432 hertz, which is said to be a vibration that is most resonant with the frequency of the spheres. So it sounds a little bit more harmonious to our ears than the regular 440. And so that's why we called it Minus Eight, because it's minus 8 hertz below standard tuning. And since then, I have recorded everything in 432 hertz. So my last album with Joshua Stoddard for Pamela was recorded in that frequency, and everything that I do with Songs of Eden is recorded at 432 hertz. So you may not have been aware of that, but it's growing in popularity and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm very grateful to Chad for introducing me to it. So today in this episode, we're talking about all sorts of things, about language, about music, creativity, social responsibility. Chad is a really fun person to talk to and a really great thinker. He's an amazing lyricist. He writes very conscious, loving music. He loves sharing it with people all across the world. He is touring a lot of the time, which he mentions. And I'm just very excited to share this first episode with you. So here we go. So, hi there.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me on the show, Sirgun.
Yeah, my pleasure. So the first time we met was in Phoenix, and you were recording first the ukulele for Minus Eight, which was an album I released last year. And that was sort of how it all began.
Oh, yes. Fun times.
Yeah. So what are you up to now? Where are you?
I'm in California at the moment, and I'm up to lots. Let's see. I've been, this summer I haven't been touring as much as I have in previous summers, just lots of other things happening in my life, but still really pushing forward with lots of music things happening, lots of collaborations, and a bit of touring here and there, which has been amazing.
So what does not a lot of touring mean to Chad Wilkins?
Well, yeah, I guess that still means a lot of touring to some people as well. Yeah, I don't know. I have in the past played, like, I think the most shows I played in 1 year was like 175 or something, which is a lot.
Wow.
But yeah, so this year has been a bit less. Been kind of working on a lot of other little things and projects and stuff. But yeah, still, doing a few festivals throughout the summer and touring a little bit here and there, mostly just around like California and Oregon, and not going too far a lot this year. But that's kind of what I'm up to.
You're going to Bhakti Fest, I saw, which is exciting.
I am. Yeah, that is exciting. So the first time I went to Bhakti Fest was with you last year. Played in your band, which was super fun, and got to connect in with the whole Bhakti family there, which is just like epic community. I really love it. And then I went to Shakti Fest as well and played with you again and played with a few other bands. And so this time is the first time I'm bringing my band to the festival, which I'm really excited about.
That's really exciting. So they're opening up their kind of their concept of the music that they're having there a little bit, I can see.
Definitely.
It's been all mantra in the past, and you do something a little different, but in a similar vein.
Similar spirit, similar vibe, but maybe a different formation expression, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've heard you say that you do use mantra, basically. I mean, it's English language, right? Because you have people sing with you.
Yeah, I guess what does mantra mean? It means a lot of different things. Like, to some people it means like repetitive singing or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I love that. You know, when you kind of can, you can kind of induce like a trance state when you're speaking your intentions repeatedly, and it can become really powerful and prayerful. And so, yeah, that happens. That happens for sure.
Yeah. And, the English language stuff, I find, well, it's different, but sometimes can be even more powerful than the, you know, non-English, because it's like you're recycling or redefining your own language. You know, you're using your language in a way that maybe you hadn't before, you know, whereas using your language to, judge yourself or judge others or something. And now you're using it. It's like an empowering use of the English language to me.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. And then, you know, using your mother tongue, using the language that you use to typically express yourself, and then using that to express, you know, transcendent concepts and praise and adoration and thanksgiving, you know, I think is really powerful, because it's really easy for your heart to access that space when it's your mother tongue, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, because so I also speak French, but it's not my mother tongue. Mm-hmm. And I've only just started in the past year to feel like I could express from my heart in French, which is interesting to me. There was a lot of trauma around the speaking of French in my life. And now I'm being presented with all these opportunities to use it in this empowering way. Like, I was just asked to record a translation of a guided meditation in French.
Oh, rad.
And these, like, the words in this, I'm telling you, I didn't even know they existed in the French language. like the word gratitude, I didn't know you could say that in French. It's funny. But yeah, it's interesting how we feel about our own language, I think, sometimes. And
yeah,
how it evolves.
Totally. Yeah, for sure. Our own language, and all languages too. Like, some languages, like, so maybe French is this way. Like, I think that a lot of Latin languages can be more expressive and easy to express emotion in, you know? I think that English and other Germanic languages are kind of maybe, what's the word? Kind of sterile, kind of like clinical, kind of like, you know, head knowledge descriptive. And so maybe it's a little bit clunky to express emotion in them. I mean, it's the easiest for me because it's my first language, you know, but I think that maybe other languages, are kind of built more around emotional concepts, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, and I don't speak them very well, but Spanish and Italian, just like the emotional energy that's placed into the words, when I'm just watching people speak it, it seems like they have a good sense of how to express emotion. And I'm not sure if it's the language that's doing it or just the culture. But yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You know, I wish I could remember the name of the language. I was reading an article about a particular language from some kind of smaller people group in Central or South America. And this whole language is built around nines, like the concept of the number nine, and everything kind of like all the letters and numbers, it all adds up to nines. But anyway, also something about the language is it's impossible to lie in this language, because the way that it's constructed is like, in order to tell a lie, everybody would know that you're lying. I don't get how it works in those people's language. I wish I could
that even sounds like, remember what the fascinating.
Language is. No, isn't that cool?
Wow. Yeah, I'd like to know more about that. Do you have any idea what it's called?
I will look it up. I will try to find that, and I'll let you know later. Maybe you can post it in the comments on
this thing. Yeah. That is really fascinating. Like you know, we create words around what we feel is most useful to express, I guess. So I've you know, the whole like Eskimo with the however many or Inuit, however many, you know, names they have for snow or something like that. But
right.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've never heard of that. It's really cool how human, well, and in Gurmukhi, or like Sanskrit. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not as familiar with Sanskrit as I am with Gurmukhi. So Gurmukhi is the language, or it's not really language, actually. It's a script that was used to write various languages in India mm-hmm. at a time when there was more of a shift to wanting the masses to be able to read sacred script so that it wasn't mm-hmm. like this scholarly thing. So they created a script where everyone could easily learn to read it. But it's, in my understanding, so many of the words are, it's almost like a subtext of the word that it's used to describe not only God or, you know, mass consciousness, but also you. So, uh-huh. you know, it's like you say, what's the word like destroyer or something. So the understanding is that you're referring to a quality within yourself, but also to a universal quality.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe that's cool. And it's built into the word.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which I find interesting.
How do you say this word destroyer?
Is it Kariyang? That's one of them. Kariyang, that's mm-hmm. from a mantra.
Kariyang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So, and I've also heard say that when people use Sanskrit that you can't really describe like a mundane function. Like, mm-hmm. Let's go over there or something, you know, like
right.
you can only really express these sort of lofty spiritual concepts in that language.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. 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 All the amazing ways that we come up with to express ourselves, you know, as, you know, animals on this planet that have developed audible languages. You know, what else I think is really amazing and, what people like you and I as musicians do is, there's another level of communication that's subtle, but also like so much more powerful. And, you know, like body language and all the other ways that people communicate with their eyes and with the way that they use tone and all that sort of stuff in speaking. But then the kind of communication that we as musicians use to evoke emotion, to express transcendent concepts, to pull on the heartstrings, you know, like something that I want to do more and more and more is like just continue to grow in learning how to infuse the intention of my thoughts and my feelings and my prayers into music, not only in the words that I say and the words that I sing, but into like the feeling of the sounds, you know. Mm. Like I've been to concerts where it's like, you know, completely instrumental and no words are being sung at all. And like, you just get hit so hard in your heart with like the sheer feeling of like depth of like connection to God that is being expressed through like somebody playing this drum or like hitting these notes on the trumpet. And you're like, yeah, that's just the right note that needed to be hit right then in that moment, whatever it is. You know, yeah, I've been at shows where it's like I'm in the audience and like somebody next to me is crying. I remember this one show I was at, this completely instrumental band, all like world music, instruments from all over the world, like 7-piece band or something. And this woman next to me is just crying and she looks over me, she's like, "What is this? What's going on?" And I'm like, "There's spirits in this music, spirits in these sounds right now." She's like, "Oh my God." You know, like I think that like subtle yet powerful and influential kind of communication is something that, you know, what you and I do is like we harness that, and mm-hmm. I wanna just like do that more and more, you know.
Yeah, that happens a lot for me lately. Well, I can feel something different in the way that I perform because I didn't used to perform a lot. I was mm-hmm. really into the recording, and I know I've mm-hmm. talked to you about that before. And mm-hmm. the playing out was a little, you know, less comfortable for me. So, but lately I've been doing it more, and I'm finding that as I get comfortable with it, I'm able to be, you know, in ease with it. it's sort of a form of channeling. Like I can hear where I'm supposed to go in my mind, you know, with the vocal or something. And then I do that and I'm like, oh, that was nice, you know, but it's not a planned thing. It's like an in the moment, this is what's needed right now. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm, totally. And I think it can be particularly really, really powerful in the context of chanting kirtan things, like in the context that you do, because, you know, I mean, well, in the songs that we sing, there's also the power of suggestion, which is a powerful thing as well. When you're singing a certain thing and you suggest that truth to somebody and that becomes prominent in their mind and that can become trance-like, you know. But then also it gets to a point where when you're saying the same thing over and over and over and over, it's like you keep enforcing that truth, you keep chanting that truth and it just becomes stronger. But it's like with the words and the verbiage you're using, it's like there's nowhere else you can go. You just keep enforcing that one phrase, you know, which is really powerful. But then like the other places that you can go is in the vibe that you're releasing through the music, you know? So there's the rise and fall, you know, where you build it up, it's driving, and then it drops down and you know, the words keep going, but like the vibe of the music drops down, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and then like the different tonal qualities express different things. And so it's like, you know, verbally particular truth, but then you're saying millions of other things in the sounds that you're creating and the tone of your voice and in the instruments you're playing and stuff like that. And so I think that's, you know, within kirtan, that can be like a really, really powerful way to practice that, that infusing your intentions and your feelings and your prayers into the music apart from the words that you're saying. Oh, I should say as in addition to the words that you're saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I really love about your music is that it's a story, you know, and you're telling the story. So you're bringing people into this space to me. And then the chorus, correct me if I'm wrong, is this mantra for the audience to repeat. So you're sort of like establishing this vibrational space and then inviting the audience to come into that space with you in the repetition of it.
Mm. I like that description. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I just pulled that from the ethers right now.
Nice. Dig it. I'm gonna hold on to that one.
Yeah. But that's why I really like, and I've never really created anything like this, but I really like that kind of music that's kind of trance-like, that sort of builds. And because the background is so repetitive, there's so many places to go with one element, like a vocal or a flute, or, you know, it just creates this base, this solid base for something to, you know, base isn't a foundation.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think that this conversation is really cool because this is like, this is why prayer actually works, like what we're talking about right now, you know, because what prayer is, it's like you have a feeling, right? And feelings, like it's proven that, like, there's this organization called HeartMath, you know, they're based in Santa Cruz. I think, have you heard of these guys?
No, I don't think so.
They developed like machinery or something. They can like measure human emotions like by actual literal vibrations that come out of your physical heart, you know?
So, I was watching somebody talk about something similar. It might be the same thing. It was a lecture that he did in Italy. I can't remember what his name was.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. But okay, continue.
Well, yeah, so like they've been able to scientifically measure like vibe. Cool. You know, like, you know, when you walk into a room, full of sad people.
Yeah.
You might not know what everybody's sad about. You feel sad all of a sudden. You walk into a room full of like joyful people and you forget about all your cares all of a sudden. You're like, wow, you pick up on the vibe. You pick up on the energy of what's going on, like with other people of the same species as you that are vibrating. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just like actually your actual physical heart, the organ of your heart actually emits vibration that other people pick up on, you know, which is like, whoa, let's like take some major responsibility for our feelings and our emotions, you know, let's not like let ourselves succumb to negativity in our life, not only because we don't want to live in that, but like it actually literally affects the world around us, you know, and butterfly effect, like we want to be you know, like you and I know, like, you know, we're the kind of people that, like, we hold the intention that we want to make this world a better place, you know?
Yeah.
So let's take responsibility for our emotions. Let's learn how to forgive quickly. Let's learn how to love. Let's learn how to not hold things against people or the world or God or anything. Like, let's love, you know?
Right.
And then so there's that level of, like, the feelings that actually literally affect the world around us, right? And then sometimes, like, those feelings become prominent enough in our being to become a thought. And that just multiplies it even more, where it's like you've got these thoughts now that are, like, almost forming into words in your mind, and it's, like, solidifying. And now the feelings that you're feeling are, like, kind of more pointy, kind of more directed, kind of more focused, and you're sending these feelings out into the world through the vibration of thought and in that plane as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's, like, another level of power. And then sometimes those thoughts become, like, actions and words, and actually control the way that we express ourselves through our bodies in the world, you know? Like, we start speaking and we start acting and doing and relating in a physical way that's outside of our feelings and thoughts. And, like, that's, like, whoa, you know, what originated as a feeling became a thought, and now it's becoming, like, doing something in the physical realm, whether it's creating little vibrations with your literal vibrations with your tongue and sounds that, like, affect mm-hmm. other people audibly, or, like, the way that you act, the way that you treat people, the way that you relate to the earth, you know, the way that you make decisions based right. on love or otherwise, you know. And then sometimes, you know, like, it becomes even more so. Like, the next level is, like, not just thoughts and actions, but, like, kind of intenser actions and words, where it's, like, in your words, you can sing them, and you can, like, put intention into it on purpose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then with your body, you can dance them or move them. Like it becomes artistic, creative expression, where, like, that energy can just get ramped up and move, you know? And this is where it starts to become prayer, you know?
Mm.
And so it's like, it gets to the point where, like, your feelings turned into thoughts, turned into words and actions, turned into, like, in, like conscious intention. You're trying to put intention in, like, behind these, what originated as feelings, and you're putting that out from mm-hmm. your being into the world, like, literally and intentionally. And that's, like, that's when it becomes prayer, because it's really, the power behind it is really ramped up at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get to the level where you're, like, multiplying that by getting together with other humans that are holding that same intention, same vibration, and chanting it together, singing it together. And it's just, like, exponentially multiplied. And you can actually shift things in the world. You can actually shift atmospheres. You can actually have, like, really huge, powerful effect. Which is why, you know, I mean, the studies have been done where there's, like, I wish I could know the statistics and the actual things that happened, but, like, you know, mass meditation
movements. I wish I were a person
movements.
That could pull up statistics. I'm not that person.
Right.
But I believe you. The emotion is there.
Yeah, totally.
The conviction is there. Tell me about it.
Right. Well, you hear about, like, you know, mass meditation movements where there's, yeah. like, you know, a million people meditating and, like, crime stopped in that city for
yeah.
like that week or that day or something like that, you know. There's
yeah.
like literally measurable, scientific measurable, like, facts that
yeah.
are obviously because people were meditating, you know. It's the power of prayer. This is why mm-hmm. prayer works, you know. And everybody likes to think that it's because of their particular religion and their version of God that they're praying to, you know. But mm-hmm. it's like, no, it's like actually the expression of God that is in you. Like the expression of divinity that is in you, and you're exercising that power by feeling something, turning that feeling into a thought, turning that thought into, like, however it becomes, like, forceful intention behind that thought that you're intentionally putting it out, you know. That's powerful, and that's prayer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to be able to do that through music with groups of people, I think is so powerful. And and to not only use the words that we sing, but also just, like, really holding that intention, the beautiful positive intentions of what we want for the world in our lives all the time. And then when we bring it to our music, you know, really holding that through every note that you sing, and, like, feeling it, like, putting your heart into it. And, like, every time you switch to a different key on the harmonium and go, okay, we're going to that note. And I'm going to that note with my heart right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it, putting my prayer into it, you know, and
yeah.
and we will never know the effect that we're having on the world, other than like we feel it and other people around us feel it. And, you know, but it's like, you know, maybe you played a concert somewhere and everybody was chanting, and like somebody down the street on the other side of the city, like actually decided to quit using heroin that day. Yeah. And somehow they got the power to do that. Mm-hmm. And like for some reason, everything just lined up in the mystical realms where it's like, they caught it. They caught the love that you're putting out, you know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, get empowered.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. That's a wonderful reminder. I love the idea, because I mean, I believe people, you know, have to make choices for themselves, and ultimately they're in, you know, control of their perspective and their emotions and all this stuff. But to be someone who provides that example, or can provide like this glimmer for someone, so that they go, you know, there's evidence of something else, of another, mm-hmm. you know, way that life could be. Because I think when we're in lower vibrational states, or when we're just focused on survival, or, you know, stuff like that, it's nearly impossible to tap into the worlds where there's something else going on, because it's just not part of your daily reality. And so
you're not aware of it.
Totally. So to have that experience where you meet someone who does what? You chant mantras, or you like, you travel all around the world telling people they're beautiful and, you know, love, like really? I didn't even know this existed, you know?
Totally. Well, you know, I think everybody's tapping into these realms unknowingly all the time. Mm-hmm. Like everybody's influenced, you know, you're right that like everybody has their own personal responsibility for their own vibe, their own state, yeah. their own mind, you know, but we don't realize like how influenced we are by everything that's flying around us right now. You know, like the human eye can only see 1% of the light spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, which means that like almost 100% of the universe is invisible, is like not perceivable to our physical senses, you know? So like, gosh, we're being affected. There's angels, there's dark spirits, there's all sorts of things that we don't get and we don't see. We have like very, very small percentage of an understanding of like what's actually flying around us and touching us and moving us and pushing us and pulling us and stuff like that, you know? And so I think as much as we can, like, learn to take responsibility for what we do understand about our own hearts, mm-hmm. and learn to walk in integrity and love and responsibility and honor. Gosh, I think honor is a big one, you know? That honor is a foundational concept to live by.
The honoring of, in what sense?
Well, think about just honor in general. Like, I mean, you know, when you meet people, like, you can feel, like, when somebody is somebody that just walks in honor, they honor creation around them, including you. You step into their presence and you feel, like, the way they hold themselves, the way they speak to you, makes you feel respected and honored as a human being, as an animal on this planet, as a life form, and as a whole bunch of molecules that have happened to come together in a way to make a human body that expresses itself like with divine light.
Yeah.
In you, you know. But and then in other people, maybe you don't get as much of a sense of that they're living in honor. Maybe other people kind of are more flippant with the way that they walk in the world, and kind of just have more of a disrespectful air about them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I just think that, like, just in general, when you come from a sense of, like, remember what it was like when you were a child and everything was amazing because you just stepped into the world and you weren't familiar with anything, and it's like, wow, look at the way that the sun like glistens off the water droplet on that leaf right there in the morning. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, existence is amazing. Existence is transcendent, and I don't get it. I don't understand it. Like, everything, awe and wonder, you know, like when you can maintain a sense of awe and wonder, then you respect what's around you, you honor what's around you. And then that kind of creates decisions that you make in your life where you're like, no, I don't need a straw because I honor the ocean, whatever it is, you know?
I think what's so important about those kinds of decisions to me is that it truly does come from a place of love where you're going, I don't need that, you know, rather than like, I'm not going to do that because then I'll be an awful person. And, you know, or like, I hate everybody who does. And, you know, there's an ease to those decisions when you are living, as you're saying, in honor, or maybe as I would qualify it, as like acceptance, you know, in this state of allowing. But I think that's key. And I see this a lot in our community where there's people who are making conscious choices in love and other people who are really fighting against what is. And it's well-intended, but because of that whole feeling thing that you were talking about, if you're feeling hateful about something, you know, that's the prayer that you're putting out.
Exactly.
It's not having the desired effect.
No, energetically. I mean, even if you're using one less straw or whatever it is in the decision that you're making, it's like, yeah, like, are you still putting hatred out vibrationally? Like, that hatred might, like, butterfly effect, like, spiral into the creation of millions of more straws or something. Ironically.
Hatred, the straw manufacturer.
Right. I mean, like, we don't get it. I mean, we have these judgments, like, we think we understand, like, where things come from, and we see, you know, like our politicians that supposedly quote unquote run our countries or whatever, making decisions we don't agree with, and we're like, oh, it's their fault. And it's like, well, we don't, like, what about, like, why are they the way they are? Why do they think like that? Like back and back and back and back, like, where's the seed decision that actually spiraled into like crazy decisions, like, you know, atomic bombs being dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, like where's the root cause of that, like, millions of years ago when some, like, predecessor of humans made some kind of, like, selfish decision based on survival, blah blah blah. Yeah, like, you just don't know, you know, like, we have these judgments and we like to scapegoat, we like to blame, but it's like, you know, ultimately we don't get it. We don't understand, like, how the world's really working, but let's love, because at least we can understand that. We can understand how to, like, move things in a better direction.
Yeah.
Like, love, forgiveness, honor, respect, and cherishing every moment, just being grateful. Like, wow, I'm feeling the sun on my body, right? I'm sitting on a deck right now. It's a nice clear day. There's, like, sun shining on me. I'm so grateful to be alive right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the vibration I want to put out in this moment.
Yeah, I think that I don't pay attention to politics, like, really at all, but I mean, I know who our president is right now. And I actually almost wrote this blog post that was like, Trump is the greatest, or is like the most important part of your spiritual practice, right? Because I think it's important to look at why these people are showing themselves. My theory is that he's just so important because it's going to show people just how limiting their beliefs are about other people's control over them. Uh-huh. You know, like, we need to get over this idea that someone else can control you, you know, because there's this, like, fear of being controlled. Well, I don't pay much attention to politics. I don't feel like whatever's going on is really having that much effect on my day-to-day life. I still feel like a free person. I feel like I can express myself in the ways that I want and choose to, you know, make a podcast. And I have so many things that are available to me and so much love that I can still flow, having nothing to do with whatever's going on. And, you know, other people are choosing to focus more on that and they're seeing it as a problem and, you know, whatever, and that's their choice. But I think that it's so interesting when these obvious, like, blights, you know, are these things show up in our practice, and are we going to use it as our excuse to feel more hatred or to practice more acceptance?
Right. That's good. That's good. Because that hatred thing is or whatever negative emotions you want to use
fear.
Words for.
It's really like, fear.
Yeah. Fear, anger, like, which even like any of those emotions are not like bad. They're part of the biological mm-hmm. evolutionary process of like survival, like, you know, but then, then it gets to a point where it's like, you're not actually running from a saber-toothed tiger right now. So you don't need fear and anger right. to give you adrenaline to get away from it. Like, you're actually, like a really privileged human being with plenty of food and water and air and shelter. Like, you know, your anger and fear is misguided right now. And so, but yeah, like the ego, which is a part of us that helps us survive, you know, it gets so imbalanced. And then, you know, when you're talking about like in our kind of conscious spiritual community, whatever, you know, some of us occasionally make decisions based on really good reasons, and some of us make the same decisions based on pride or ego, or like you know, where I'm choosing not to use the straw because I'm better than everybody else and I judge everybody that else that uses the straw, or whatever, you know. And it's like the ego is so trickster that it's like, you know, you can like dissolve your ego and be like so spiritual and like transcend so much, and your ego is just like, yeah, look how spiritual I am. And it's just like, it's snuck back in the back door and you miss the whole point. Yeah. And your whole amazing lifetime of spiritual practice is actually spiritual bypassing of reality. Like when you could just keep it really, really simple and just love and forgive. And like what you said, acceptance of the now, acceptance of what is, and then bringing about positive change from that place of acceptance, you know, rather than pushing really hard to resist reality and hold yourself and others in a place of fear in all the ways that we do, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, as you say, very sneaky back in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. I mean, you know, I get it. I go through it. It's tough to, you know, not resent certain things that you feel are imposing themselves upon you, and you'd rather that, you know, not have them be true. You know, but I feel like that's for you too. It's for you to look at and be like, oh yeah, look, There I go again, you know, there's that judgment again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it. Life is our greatest teacher, you know, like actual just day-to-day life. Relationships, decisions, when somebody cuts you off in traffic, like, like, you know, that's where the real spiritual life is real, you know, and there's all these amazing things that we do and modalities that we use to, progress our spiritual growth and our practices, like, you know, like we've got, like, you know, our retreats and our yoga and our music and our medicines and ceremonies and books and podcasts and all the things that we have that are like these little tools that kind of can help us along on our journey, you know. But like, I've been saying this a lot lately, it's like we could participate in all these things and like really like have the outward appearance of like, you know, I'm all about self-development and growth and bringing more love into the world and be doing all these surface level things and really actually have zero growth if we're not actually like integrating the truths that we're learning in and becoming the practice, becoming love. It's so simple. It just comes back to love. Yeah. You know, that's why I like to sing about love a lot. I think love is like kind of basic foundational aspect of all this stuff. But you know, it's just simple. Like actually when it comes down to it, like, man, making decisions to forgive and love moment by moment and things that happen to you in life, like that's a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
That's really where the rubber hits the road, you know?
Yeah. And for that, you have to recognize when it's happening. So, I mean, it's obviously important to have those, you know, that daily practice, whatever you do, and the retreats can be really nice because it causes you, it can let you reset, but in a sense, it's like you have to do the physical work and also the shavasana, you know, like you have to, so like the daily, you know, the daily living is sort of like the physical work, and then the, you know, the practices to me are like the integration or, the connection that you need in order to do this work. But if your yoga practice or your meditation or your chanting or whatever you're doing in the morning stops there, and then you don't notice anything that's going on throughout your day, and you're not recognizing that it's all coming so that you can become more aware, well then, you know, it's a nice thing to do. It's certainly not hurting you. But it's not, maybe, you know, it's, you're not getting the full juice from it.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Because the juice comes in the, like, in the moment by moment. Well, you know, so how about this? Like, spiritual practice can become spiritual bypass depending on the posture of your heart. If in your heart, you're really, if in your heart, it's real, then it's real. If in your heart, you're not actually going there on a heart level, on the deepest, deepest levels of you, then like it can become spiritual bypassing. And then like it can actually become detrimental in the way that it's like in your mind, you think you're doing the work because you're doing all the things. And so it's like you don't even realize that there's another way to go about it. You don't even realize there's something deeper you could be doing because you're just like, no, I'm doing all the things. You know, and that's where the ego is tricky. And that's where the heart is kind of slippery. It's hard to grasp. You know? And that's why in life, when it's like, you know, challenges come, it's that when challenges come, trials, tribulations, it kind of grabs you and shakes you. And it's like, hey, where are you at? Like, really, you know, like right now, not when it's all easy for you because you're surrounded by everybody that's on the spiritual path and like you're, oh, that's all the influences around you and that's the atmosphere you create around you. But like when a trial comes, it shakes you and it's like, okay, well, what about you? Like beneath your ego, beneath the persona and the personality that you've created around your yourself and your expression in the world, like what about you deeper inside you? What about you? Where are you at? You know?
And how strong is your connection to, you know, whatever you call it, your soul, your inner being, your true self? Like how strong, if that connection is strong, then you have something to lean on. You know, you have something to go to. And in those moments when there is so much, you know, external challenge or, you know, contrast, you're, that's the only place you can go. Because if you try to, you know, solve things, I'm using air quotes, solve things by like, rearranging the external parts and not doing any inner adjustment, then you're not really getting the message in it. You know, you're not able to use this as an opportunity for growth. Like you were talking about, you're missing it.
I don't want to miss it. I want to catch it. I want to catch it, you know, because we go through, so I wrote a new song recently called Song of the Dawn, and there's a video out, and you could share the link on this maybe. There's a video out for it,
and well, so you have it, we could play it at the end,
you know. Maybe, you know, I actually haven't recorded it just as an audio thing properly in the studio. I just like did a live video of it.
Oh, okay, cool. So, I'll share the link.
Yeah, maybe post the link or something. But like the concept around the song is called Song of the Dawn. And it's about how like, I will sing the song of the dawn in the dark of the night. And when it seems like the morning's taking too long to come, I'm going to bring my own light from within myself. And then it's also about like how we all go through painful experiences in life. And so, when you have to feel the pain, feel it hard and feel it all the way so you don't have to go back there again. But get all the juice out of it, you know, get all the blessings of the hidden blessings of lessons and growth that comes out of painful experiences and really be present with it. Don't resist reality, but soak it up, get all the juice out of every experience so that you can take it. You know, I think sometimes when we go through hard times, sometimes if we don't get the lesson, we have to like keep going through it. And keep revisiting it until it actually hits us, you know.
And it gets bigger, it gets louder.
It can, like, hey, are you listening or not? So learning to bring our own light in the darkness, as well as learning to really soak up the hidden blessings of lessons within pain.
And that's so important. I'm so glad you said that, because people are so afraid me included, I mean, you know, it's like a primal thing. It's like that fight or flight thing of feeling negative emotion, of really experiencing it. Because there's this idea, I think, this is my theory, that if I experience my pain, I'm gonna chronically be in pain. I'm gonna just go there and never come out, you know?
It's kind of the opposite,
but
really.
Exactly, the opposite is true.
Yeah.
If you keep running away from it, it's gonna keep calling you. But if you feel it, it actually lasts so much less time because you truly looked at it and there's really not that much to look at, you know?
Oh, feel it,
I'm
honor it.
I'm angry right now. Okay. I'm less angry.
Yeah, I know. As soon as you, like, that's Eckhart totally talks about this stuff. Like, when you feel an emotion and then you acknowledge the emotion, all of a sudden you're an observer of the emotion and therefore you realize that you're separate from it and it's not you. And therefore it dissipates because you're no longer identifying with it as a part of you because you're looking at it and you can't be looking at it from outside of it if it is you, you know? So yeah, just observing it helps it to dissipate and then you win.
Yeah.
And then you grow.
What an amazing book that was in its time, The Power of Now. I mean, I read it at a time I didn't understand it at all, but I still understood that it was important somehow. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to revisit it now because I think I practiced so much of what he was talking about, but because it wasn't really a practical book, it was like, you know, more talking about these concepts. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know how to apply it into my life at the time.
Gotcha.
You know, like, what does that look like when I'm having a conversation with my parents? What does that look like when I'm eating? What does that look like when I'm, you know, running errands, that sort of thing?
Yeah. You know, I've read a bunch of his books now, but the first one I read of his was A New Earth.
Oh, okay. I read that one too, but
yeah, that one super impacted me. You know how, like, there's certain books or teachings or something that come your way, and like, I like to call them, like, hinge experiences, because it's like a door hinge where it's like something turns in your life, you know, where it's like a I don't know, like, turning point in your life, or just like a turning point revelation where it's like, wow, this is a big revelation that is gonna change me and affect me and help me in a big way. And so that book was that for me in a big way, A New Earth.
That's cool. Yeah, you were probably ready for it at the time. I think it was a hinge experience for me in a different way. Mm-hmm. But now so much of the work that I do, coaching people and in this program that I'm assisting this man who channels, I mean, it's all that. It's so obvious to me. I'm like, okay, well, the seeds were planted 10 years ago. And I think they've just, you know, grown in my consciousness in the last couple of years. So it's interesting how that happens.
Yeah.
Which is another reason why you can't get too attached to when you share information with other people and they don't get it.
Uh-huh.
You don't know when that's going to matter for them.
Maybe. Right. Yep.
Years and years down the line.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yep. Yep. But, you know, through music, you know, this is a big part of why I think we do what we do is because you can bypass the mind and, like, what people are quote unquote ready for and quote unquote not ready for, you know. When it's, you're like, we were talking about, like, putting that intention in the sounds, and people can receive stuff they're not ready for in their intellect.
Yeah.
When they're getting it packaged that way, you know?
It dissolves so much resistance, the music. Mm-hmm. You know, it just opens the heart. It allows, you know, the cells, they're like, oh yeah, you know, like, I'm so ready for this, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a good, I don't know, like, what would you call it? It's like a lubricant.
yep,
a musical
good.
Lubricant for information, you know.
Nice, love it. That's good. Yeah, it's powerful. You know, talking back about, like, you know, when you were talking about politics and stuff like that, like, even when we maybe don't pay a lot of attention to it, like, you know, as an artist, you're a very powerful person. And, like, when you think about who the real change makers that have brought positivity into our culture, like, who are they? Like, nobody actually really thinks of presidents. Yeah. You think of John Lennon.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And Bob Marley.
Yeah.
you know, like these epically influential people that have like shaped culture, like with John Lennon's song Imagine, you know, that song is a theme of a generation that has affected us so deeply in such profoundly positive ways, you know. And Bob Marley, like all the positivity that he sings, it's like he's like, everybody knows about Bob Marley in every country in the world. And like reggae music is the single most influential genre of music there is in this world, you know? And all because like this one guy from this little island, like somehow caught it and like the message spread. And, you know, in the civil rights, I don't even remember who was president at the time, but in the civil rights movement, you know, there's like all these riots going on and the president calls James Brown to get on television and address the masses to stop the riots. You know what I mean? Like that happened.
Yeah.
You know, as artists, as musicians, as creative people who seek to touch humans in the heart through creative expression, like we've got a lot of responsibility because we've got a lot of power.
Yeah.
And even though like on the surface, you know, we think that presidents and prime ministers are controlling the masses because they're the ones pushing big red buttons and making big decisions. It's like, you know, the creatives are the ones that are, that actually have the opportunity to shift and shape culture for the better.
Yeah. Wow. That gave me goosebumps. So when I first decided to do the kind of music that I do, I was I don't know if you call it regular. I was a singer-songwriter in a different, you know, arena. And that was exactly why I stopped doing what I was doing, because I started doing yoga. I started being more aware. And I recognized the words I was singing. I didn't want to keep putting them out there. You know, I didn't want that. I wouldn't have said it this way then, but I didn't want that vibration. I didn't want to keep having to, you know, it's so funny because you sing a song when you do it live, you know, you sing it over and over again. So I'm like, I don't want to keep telling this same sad story, you know, over and over again, even if people seemingly like it, you know, like this is not putting me in a good state. And ultimately it's not helping them. So, that was a funny hinge moment in my life.
Interesting. Yeah, that's
cool.
Did
you ever do any other type of music?
I mean, let's see, like way back in the day, it was more like churchy Christian kind of stuff. I was
that's right. Okay.
Yeah, like leading worship in like the Christian kind of scenario. And then, I think I just like continued on in that same vein, but just broadened my concept of God to include everything and everybody. And so it's like, I'm kind of doing the same thing. But I think I feel like I got a lot of my training or whatever in that arena. I just kind of continued in that same vein of like wanting to release the Holy Spirit through music and, just without the box context of that particular, modality or path, you know? So that's kind of always been my main intention with music.
Yeah, that seems like a fairly easy transition, right? You're like from this type of church leader to now this type of church leader.
Right. Easy in some ways and really difficult and complicated in others, to be honest.
Was it mentally, did it feel like really big in your mind as that was happening?
We're getting kind of deep in personalized stuff in here a little bit, but like, like when you are really, really deeply and heavily involved, and your whole persona is built around a certain concept of what God is and all of your mission in life and everything that you live for is like infused into that, limited understanding and box. And then you start to transition out of that. There's a very long, lengthy, painful untangling process that can happen for most people that do the brave journey of extricating themselves from fundamentalism, basically, you know? Mm-hmm. And but for me, yeah, there's painful aspects of it. But I also like feel a whole lot of honor for that whole path, because mm-hmm. within Christianity is where I met God. I learned and started experiencing mysticism and mystical realities and trance states in other realms and miracles and all the beautiful things that I still continuing on with without the rigid definitions anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel a lot of honor for all the stepping stones that have been big parts of my life to lead me to where I am now.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chad. This was super fun. I'm so glad we did this, and thank you for being my first ever episode. If you ever want to come on again, you are always welcome. I know you have a lot of stuff going on. If you want to tell people about what's going on, feel free, and how they can reach you.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. I really appreciate being called in to be on your show. It's super fun and great to just catch up with you. We haven't really had a deep drop-in chat for a while.
Yeah, that's, so you know, cool. That's the main reason I'm doing this, honestly. I'm gonna nice. Film my, I'm gonna catch up with all my friends and film it.
That's cool.
Or record it.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome. Yeah, you can you know, find my music on the internet anywhere. Just type in Chad Wilkins, Spotify, YouTube, iTunes. Is iTunes still a thing? Apple Music? I don't know, whatever, however that works. Or ChadWilkinsMusic.com.
Cool.
And yeah, that's where you can find things that I do.
Sweet. All right. Sweet. Well, this was lovely. Have a wonderful night, and I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Thank you, Sirga, and much love. Great
much
to chat
love.
With you.
Bye.
See ya.